This is one of the fundamental principles of Krishna consciousness. As a matter of fact, the Bhagavad Gita has two main principles. One is the eternality of the soul, and the other is the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, meaning that he's the Supreme Soul, and everyone else is subordinate to him. And the process of realizing that has been elaborately explained in all the different chapters of the Bhagavad Gita as a common theme. For instance, in the next chapter, Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmaniga Vihastini, Shuni Chaiva, Swapake Cha, Pandita Samadarshanaha. Now the humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with an equal vision the learned and gentle Brahmin, the cow, the elephant, the dog, and the dog eater. In other words, to see the soul and the super soul in everyone's heart is the basic principle of spiritual knowledge. And how to arrive at that is, of course, through the process of devotional service. And devotional service also depends upon being conscious of Krishna. They go together. Unless we're conscious of Krishna, then we'll be attracted by the illusory energy. And the illusory energy means that we'll lose our intelligence. And losing our intelligence, spiritual intelligence, means that we'll be interested in simply gratifying our senses. And for one interested in gratifying the senses, there are objects in the material world that appear attractive, and there are objects that appear unappealing for such sense gratification. That's called the duality. Therefore, the general theme is to hear about Krishna at the beginning and then try to understand Krishna in truth, that he actually exists and that we have a relationship with Krishna. In the 18th chapter, Krishna says that samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram vinasyava minashantam yakpashyati sapashyati. That one who can see that the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is accompanying all living entities and all bodies, that neither the soul nor the super soul within the destructible body is ever destroyed, actually sees. Samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram. Samam sarvam hi sarvatra samavastitam isharam ihinastyatmanatmanam tatoyati puram gitim. One who sees that the Supreme Soul is equal everywhere does not degrade himself by his mind, and thus he approaches the transcendental destination. In other words, if we at least even theoretically accept that Krishna is everywhere, that he's in every atom, and that he's in our heart, and that he's the proprietor of this body, and that he's the controller of our activities as the super soul, then we won't become attracted to trying to do things independently from Krishna. In other words, if we inquire what Krishna wants to do with his property, namely this body, and we do those things, then we come under the spiritual energy. And of course, Krishna doesn't want us to do things that are extremely difficult. He says, Mahatmanas tu mam partha daivim prakritim ashitya bhajanyanyanyam manaso gyatva bhutadem avya. Those who are mahatmas, what Krishna says the great souls, are not those who have a great bank balance or have great athletic ability or have many followers. Krishna, mahatmanas tumam daivim prakritim. Those great souls are under the spiritual energy. And because they're under the spiritual energy, because they're worshipping me, because they're engaged in service to me, ananya, mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakritim ashitya bhajananyanya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyam. And what is their activities? What is this devotional service? What makes them great souls? What contest do they win? What scholarship do they achieve? Who do they defeat to become great? No, Krishna has a different criteria. Sadatam kirtayantamam. Itantascha drita vritaha namasyantascha bhaktya nityukta upasade. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. So to become a great soul doesn't require some extraordinary feat on our part. It requires simply to chant Krishna's glories incessantly, to feel humble and determined to serve Krishna. Then one becomes a great soul. Because great soul in Krishna's eyes. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the people who are considered great are not necessarily considered very great in modern society. Kolavekar Sridhar is glorified, although he was a seller of banana leaves. Now in Bengal, if you try and sell bananas and bananas and banana leaves, you wouldn't be considered a great soul. Unless you owned all the banana trees in Bengal, and people might appreciate your endeavor for economic development. But if you just have a few banana trees and you're selling the leaves, it's not a very lucrative business. As a matter of fact, he wasn't even making rupees, he was making annas, which is just he was getting maybe a tenth of a rupee and dividing that up and giving half to the Ganges and worship for the Ganges, and half he was living on. And what was he living on? He was eating bananas. Now, ordinarily, he wouldn't make Time magazine or even the local newspaper. But because he was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was in love with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and would playfully quarrel with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu every day. Therefore, he made it into Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he was considered a great personality. And indeed, when he was offered by Lord Chaitanya, if we believe that he's God, he was offered lordship over the entire universe, he refused it. Even over one little planet, he wasn't interested. Because he simply, the only thing he was interested in is that Lord Chaitanya would come and play with him every day, tease him, snatch away his bananas. So that made him a great soul. Now, if we want to become a great soul in the estimation of ordinary people, then we have to develop our hankering and our lamentation. Otherwise, people won't take us seriously. Unless you become greedy in the modern society, people think you're pretty useless. Or as Prabhupada said, one man is asking another man, are you intelligent? And so he's checking his pocket to see if he has any money. The idea is that if a person is actually intelligent, he's definitely going to have some money. Otherwise, he's useless. But that's not the criteria in the Bhagavad Gita. The criteria is exactly different. It's the prarishat, priyam prapya, no dvijat prapya cha priyam. Oh, actually, that comes after the Vidyavinaya verse. To get to the Vidyavinaya verse, to see everyone equally, Krishna says it requires some tapasya. And what is that tapasya? That's the first time I forgot that word. Tad buddhyas, tad atmanas, tad nishtas, tad parayanaha, gachanyapana avritim, jnana nirduta kalmashaha. One's faith, one's mind, one's intelligence, one's refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, that one becomes fully cleansed of all misgivings through complete knowledge, and thus proceeds straight on the path of self-realization. In other words, full engagement, absorption in Krishna consciousness makes one a great personality. Be able to see, have a vision of seeing everyone in relation to Krishna. As a matter of fact, according to Bhagavad Gita, our vision depends upon our relation with Krishna. We may imagine that I don't really presently have a relation with Krishna, but actually our whole vision simply depends upon what is our relationship to Krishna. If we're relating to Krishna under the modes of material nature, if that's what we want in our relation with Krishna, then we're supplied a vision either in ignorance or in passion or in goodness. And we become completely convinced that this is my real identity. sadvanurupa sarvasha shraddha bhavati bharata shroma yo yo purusham yo yascharas eva saha. Then Maya will supply us with a vision. As a matter of fact, Maya is supplying everyone with a vision and a mission. And generally the mission in Maya society is not very complicated. In Spanish, the mission is Barriga Llena Corazón Contento. Does anyone know Spanish? The heart. Yeah, when the stomach's full, the heart is pleased. That's generally people's mission. Fill the belly up and then find a nice place to rest it. And if people can fulfill that mission, they consider themselves, and what to speak, as it says in the Bhagavatam, that if people can actually fill their own stomach up and fill their, you know, two children and a wife's, their stomach too, one is considered to be a great hero in modern society, worthy of all kinds of praise. And that's under the modes. Of course, in the mode of ignorance, the vision is, you know, struggle to find the nearest bed and lie down in it. If you can find something comfortable to sleep on, then you're considered to have had a successful day. And in passion, you get two beds. One for the morning, one for the evening. And in goodness, you can sleep anywhere. It doesn't really matter. You're equal everywhere. And transcendental means that actually, even if you go to sleep, you dream of Krishna. So there are different visions. One vision is to see everyone and everything in relation to Krishna and see it as the potential to serve Krishna. And when we forget that vision, then Dhyayato vishayam pumsam sangasteshu pujayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodo pujayate. Then we'll get another vision. We'll look around to see what's attractive to our senses. Even when we go on book distribution or our Harinam, we pass by a bakery and we look in and we think, wow, not bad. Check my ball. Maybe I could sneak back at the end of Harinam. At least the mind may contemplate that. And as soon as we do that, then we're in some other world. Everyone is chanting Hare Krishna and we're chanting in our mind something different. Cream and cake and everything nice. So as soon as we start looking at we become inattentive to Krishna consciousness, then naturally we're going to look around to see if there's something attractive to my senses. Something to taste, something to smell, something to touch, something to listen to. As I said before, sometimes you have devotees with their headphones on. Well, they're definitely listening to a bhajan. And you get closer and you hear it's Led Zeppelin, you know. So, as soon as we have that attraction to the senses, then immediately there's attachment. And from attachment, lust arises. So if we're wondering why sometimes lust arises, it's because we forget Krishna, and therefore our material nature will give us some inspiration to fulfill what our mind is contemplating. We start thinking, well, what it would be like. And then Maya provides us with the inspiration to try to find out what it would be like to satisfy our senses. And if we do actually satisfy our senses, then we become greedy to satisfy them more. If you have a nice sweet and you really like it, then you look around and see if there's another one. And after some time, there may be not any more. They may be all gone. Or someone took mine. And we become frustrated, angry. And what is the result of this lust, anger, and greed? It becomes delusional. In other words, if we want to find out what's the result of our accumulated lust, anger, and greed over our many lifetimes, we just have to look in the mirror. This is a reward that we've gotten for all the lust, anger, and greed that we've become absorbed in. And we love it dearly. We're actually proud of it. We want other people to look at it too. Put it on Facebook. Look at my lust, anger, and greed. Isn't it beautiful? Wouldn't you like to have such a product of lust, anger, and greed? So we enter into this dream-like delusion, and that we believe that we're this body, and everyone else is their body too. And we think, I'm fortunate because as a result of my lust, anger, and greed, I've gotten this beautiful body. And look at this poor living entity. He didn't have the proper lust, anger, and greed. Look what a miserable body he got for it. So as a result of this delusion that we're walking under, if we ever had any real knowledge, we forget it. As we contemplate more and more delving into our gratifying our senses, whatever factual knowledge we have, we forget. And then we lose our whatever intelligence we have, diminishes. And even to understand that we're not this body becomes extremely difficult. Therefore, if we meet people and we try to explain to them what seems obvious, that your body is changing and you, the eternal soul, are always the same, they can't at all contemplate what you're talking about. They look at you like a cocker spaniel is looking at his master. What are you talking about? What do you think, you're some philosopher or something? This is too deep for me. They think their body is changing and that they're not changing is very, very deep. It's too deep for them to understand. So, and yet they can go to school and learn, read all the Kierkegaard or what was his name from who wrote Thus Spoke Vasudha. Nietzsche. They can read these crazy people and they actually think they get some sense from them. And the actual philosophy they think is, oh, this is too complicated. The things that they're experiencing every day, at every moment, contemplating objects of the senses and developing lust and greed and anger and delusion and forgetfulness and loss of their intelligence, that they can't understand. And some contemplated knowledge that makes absolutely no sense when you really look into it. They think this is actually very advanced philosophy. And they'll go around advocating it as reality. Well, it's just a product of their delusional minds. It has nothing to do with the eternality of the soul, nothing to do with karma, nothing to do with the fact that we're under the control of the material nature, the universe is moving with intelligence. Nothing to do with that. And they think they know something. They don't even know who they are. They don't know who anyone else is. And they're simply relating to each other on the basis of delusion. They think the whole world is moving according to their mind. And they work according to their mind, their delusional mind, and their bewildered intelligence. And they wind up in another bewildered state, another bewildered circumstance, still struggling to gratify their senses and try to make some meaning out of life, which actually has no meaning for them. Therefore, as it says here, yesh gyatvana punamaham yena bhutana yasheshani drakshashatniyatomai yesh gyatvana punamaham evam yasasi pandava that real knowledge is actually not that complicated. It means that there is actually a God, and it's not us. Now, people don't mind hearing that there's a God, but they'd rather it be them. They'd actually be enlivened. Yes, there's God, and I'm it. Yes, I always knew there was truth in your somewhere. But to find out that there's a God and they're not that God, then it's very disappointing. And to find out that God is the proprietor of everything is extremely disappointing to people. That all their endeavor to become the Lord of something is, and their fact that they're never going to become the Lord is like the worst thing you can ever tell a materialist. It's like the topmost blasphemy is to declare that there's no possibility that they're going to become God. And if you tell them that they're eternal and that they're eternally wasting their time here trying to become God, they'll even become more disturbed. That all my endeavor, you know, you tell someone who's been working their whole life to lord it over the material nature, get a family and command the children, command the wife, and no one listens to them. And even the dog, you know, doesn't pay any attention anymore because it's extremely frustrating. And therefore, when one hears some philosophy, either if one is somehow or another pious, one may accept it after becoming extremely frustrated. But when one is younger, one actually believes that if I get enough education and I make some money and I actually go to school and learn how to win friends and influence people, then I'm actually going to be able to lord it over the material nature and people are actually going to take me seriously. And they believe that at the beginning, and then at the end, they're completely frustrated. And they spend the rest of the time taking intoxication so they can live in a dream world and imagine that they actually had a successful life. But if we accept that there is time and we're under time and that we're eternal and that we shouldn't waste our time eternally fighting against time, which is insurmountable, trying to preserve an ever-changing body. It's like trying to carry water in a basket. Not just an ordinary basket, but in a wire basket. It doesn't work. Building sandcastles on the shore of an ocean and then watching the tide come in and take your sandcastle away is rather disappointing. So one should, Bhagavad Gita is meant to wake us up to reality so we can live according to reality and actually understand how Krishna not only is directing us, but he's actually our friend. He's actually trying to direct us back to the spiritual world to live eternally in full bliss and full knowledge. But we're rather stubborn. We think, well, I didn't make it in my last lifetime, but I've acquired so much information. Now we have the computer age. I just type into Google Guru, you know, how to become eternal in this body. And of course we'll get an answer. How to stay young in this body forever. Eat your breakfast cereal and take your vitamin pill. Oh, great! I knew there was an answer. And don't go to Italy. All right. This is really wisdom. I knew there's some reason why I bought this computer. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
And he says, you yourself are ready. How to stay young in this body eternally. But number six is do yoga.
Do yoga, all right. Let me see. I'm closer to eternity. I'm old. Oh, my leg broke. I won't make it. Is that number six? What was number one?
Give yourself a break.
Give yourself a break.
Doesn't work. Oh, now it works.
Great. I guess now we've learned the secret of life. Anything else? Trust Google. All right. Thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.